You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talevi, and tackling your questions on the line this evening are David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from FNB Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. David, Wayne, good evening to you both. I'm glad to see both of you have lights on, and so we will embrace the light for as long as we have it. Wayne, if I may start with you tonight. We have good days and we have bad days in the market. So we started off well on Monday, and I said back then not to take it with a pinch of salt. And today we sort of fell in a bit of a heap. The gains were quite pronounced among shares like Sasol, PPC, which we shall get to. But certainly some of the energy companies, HCI, Montauk, not doing very well at all.
Well, look, I mean, the oil price, thank goodness, it's below 110. So that's one of the reasons why Sasol is down. And the rand was a little bit stronger. But this is very typical behavior in a bear market. You know, you get these little relief rallies that come through, and then people all think, shoo, well, thank goodness for that, it's over. Then our market today is down seriously. But, you know, there was every indication before the markets opened in America and when the markets opened that they would be down, but they're staging a nice strong recovery. So tomorrow we'll be up again.
Yes, it's most perplexing. In fact, it's probably better not to watch the markets at all for maybe about a year and then come back and see where you are. I'm being facetious, obviously. But David, there clearly isn't much value in staring in panic at your watch list every day with these kind of daily moves.
No, it drives you mad. You know, eventually you die of remorse, kind of trying to work out even the day-to-day movements up and down. I was listening to Mr. Jay Powell testify in front of Congress. I mean, you can't believe that those are senators. You know, to be honest, one really has to question the United States. I know we have it bad enough here, but don't think that the U.S. politicians are that far away. But nevertheless, you listen to him, he'll make a statement, the markets go up. He makes another statement, the markets go down. You know, when he says that it's going to be difficult to get a soft landing, the markets go down. Then he says the financial sector.
Well, he said, I've got to look. I mean, he said the economy as a whole could handle significantly
consumer sector,
tighter monetary policy.
The consumer sector was strong. Apologies, I've been writing these down. Then it goes up, you know, and so we go all over the place. You go ditty, you know, just sitting out trying to watch and work out all these areas. So I don't know, and you know that's how markets respond. So to be honest, as Wayne was saying, we were bracing ourselves for almost like a 1.5% drop in U.S. markets. Instead, they're steady. So wait until he testifies tomorrow; you'll have a completely different view.
But look, I mean, we must understand, we must always see things, I think, in a little bit of perspective. It's highly likely that food and oil inflation will be deeply negative in the second half of next year. I mean, deeply negative. And the U.S. recession is a very good chance the U.S. will go into, I think, a relatively mild recession. And in recessionary conditions, there's no more wage inflation. Wage inflation in America is running at 6.56%. I mean, it's enormously high. So by the end of next year, we're in interest rate cutting territory again. You know, you've got to see it. It's a cycle.
Well, let's hope.
I've got to live that long,
right,
though, Wayne.
Yeah, exactly. We might all be aged wrecks by the time that rolls around. Okay, well, let's get to some questions because trying to throw the bones and divine the future is a mug's game. There's a question, two questions on PPC, which came out with a trading statement. And you will recall that PPC was one of the surprise stocks of 2021. It all seems to be unraveling hideously fast. The question is, PPC's down 20%. Is it all in the trading statement or is there something else? I would love to hear the panel's thoughts, says the viewer. And then another viewer says, should I hold, buy more, or sell? I don't know if you want to sell after it's fallen 20%. But that clearly was not expected, that they expect to post a headline, an earnings loss.
A loss, Look, they must be suffering the most enormous margin squeeze. If you're a cement producer, you use power, whether it's oil or gas or electricity, or you use power because your game is you know, heating things to incredibly high temperatures to turn it into cement. So their margins, as I said, must be being squeezed. I wouldn't actually sell because, you know, the building industry, building activity doesn't look that bad. Eh? It's okay. You know, so, man, I know it's a small, relatively small share, but I wouldn't sell. I think, you know, as I said early on, I think the price of oil and everything's going to fall quite materially. And I think that will relieve a lot of pressure on their margin.
David, I suppose the worry is that, you know, PPC just seemed to have come out of a period of great indebtedness. So that was, you know, that is what kept a lot of people very nervous of the share, and they kind of pulled themselves right and things were coming right. But as Wayne says, you know, they also, we spoke to the CEO a few months ago and he lamented just how useless Transnet has become to them, how they can't move the stock that they need using the rail lines, so they have to truck it. And so, I mean, that is an exponential cost. And I suppose that's going to be with them for some time until Transnet gets its act together. Would you buy more PPC shares, maybe on the expectations that this is overdone and that it's a temporary period of extreme hardship, but it's going to come right?
Well, a temporary period has been for a couple of years because there's no fixed investment here. You know, they can sell lots of little bags of cement to the bucky builders, but eventually for them to survive and to prosper, they need huge projects. They need dams to be built or something of that magnitude, and they're not getting it. So they really, it's a very tough industry. And Wayne mentions they're not getting any help from electricity, from Transnet, from all the government institutions that were actually built to help industry prosper. So it's been difficult. Look, they only made a cent or two last year and they only lost a cent or two now. So I'm not quite sure whether it deserved a 20% knock, you know.
Well, 65 cents in earnings per share. $65 in earnings per share from continuing operations was the last year. And that's going to fall to a loss of between 3 and 7 cents. So
yeah, well, maybe I read it too fast, you know.
You did look at, the earnings per share for the group, so that's taking all operations into account last year, was 12 sets. Okay, so you're not entirely wrong. In fact, you can choose from three sets of figures. I mean, pick one.
Yeah, that's what they are. No, oh, well, obviously chose the wrong set, yeah.
Okay, so yes, I mean, your point is well made that you need these big infrastructure projects, which everyone is desperate for government to launch. But I suppose while it's so consumed with fighting itself, the chances of that happening are minimal. Anyway, that's my rant. Okay, moving on to another question. There's a question on Karoo, the owner of Cartrack. And it says the chasm between profitability and prospects could not be wider for Karoo. Year-on-year revenue and other financial indicators are up, but the share price is at a post-IPO low with a 10% Charlie horse today to boot. Is this general sector overhang? Is it negative NASDAQ sentiment? Or is there something seriously misshapen in the market towards the share?
It's not a good sign. You know what I mean? It's one of these companies that did very well here and kind of moved to Singapore where it's supposed to be getting great growth. And I always get worried when companies, number one, go offshore. It's not a big business in that. But when the prospects look good and the share price goes the other way, you've got to start asking questions. You know, just be careful. I'm not saying that there's anything sinister, but just start to ask questions and that. Why is it not responding to the good news that comes out of the market? So I've been noticing that because it is at a low relative to when it did this, this fancy move to the NASDAQ. Really, it's all its operations are actually in Singapore and that.
And but South I still Africa. Think a actually, lot South relies on here.
It still relies on a lot here. So just sharpen your pencil and do a bit of work on that. Why is it doing what it is doing?
I mean, Wayne, taking into account what David said, one of the reasons why they listed on NASDAQ was because they argued that they were underrated under the South African market and they would attract a higher rating in amongst the technology players. of course, I suppose that maybe the thesis was right at the time, but then it's all unwound spectacularly. Do you think, like David, that there might be something in the numbers, or that it's just the general sector which has been smashed this year, and Karoo is just a victim of that?
Yeah. Look, if you talk about the so-called fangs, or now the mangs, Netflix is down 70. All the others are down 50, except Google, which is down 25. And I mean, Tesla's down 50. You don't want to be on the NASDAQ in that environment. It's a great idea to go there. But the difference is, you know, I mean, obviously they use technology. I mean, obviously that's their game, but they're not a tech company. They're not in entertainment and social media and online advertising and gaming and that. So they're not, you know, the techie tech that we sort of know. That it's a good, solid underlying business. And if I remember correctly, the appreciation when they swapped the shares out onto the NASDAQ was astonishing. Mm-hmm. And I think the shares just coming back to a normal valuation level. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know how much further it's going to fall, but the next thing you should do with this is buy, because it's a very good company.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose, you know, that's the normal valuation level is what irked management in the first place. So I wonder what they have to say about this. You know, their assertion, their contention was that they were totally undervalued by the South African market. So it's
you know, they went all that way up to about 62 Rand about a year ago, a little over. You know, they're down at 37. So a lot of people seem to have abandoned it. And that's what worries me. Why? And believe me, they've got lots of followers. As Wayne says, you know, it's a very, very good company. And I'm not involved in it at all. And I just watch it because there was so much fanfare around the listing and that. And you know, I try and look for businesses that are going to prosper and do well. And this one just seems to be fading. You know, and also they run up 10% one day and then down 10% and then down. And anyway, just watch, you know. The results don't really reflect what the share price is doing now. The results are good.
So I launched the question on Telkom, which I suppose everyone has now forgotten. So let me mention it again. Just asking for your view on it after a massive correction. He said the results weren't impressive, but he does point out you could buy it at a PE of 6. So is this a decent entry, or is there more downside? David, starting with you.
You know, if you look at Telkom's results, they've got this dilemma where they have to maintain their old business while trying to build a new business. And the two offset each other. And that's going to go on. I mean, yes, they are making progress on the new business, which is the mobile business, the data business. But, you know, having to maintain their legacy business is a massive drag. And they can't just abandon it,
yeah.
You know, because they've signed a lot of contracts. So I think, you know, this is going to continue, and this is going to continue to be a weight on their ability to, you know, to really get rid of it and move ahead. So, you know, for me, that's the danger. I can't fault them for trying on the other side and building up subscribers and so on. But it's as long as they've got the fixed line business, it's going to be a drag, and they can't get rid of BCX as well. So, there are issues there.
I mean, Wayne, you know, they keep talking about a value unlock in spinning off, what do they call it, gyro. It's the properties.
The towers.
The towers business.
Yeah.
I mean, OpenServe, it sounds as if they want that to be a standalone unit. So I don't know if they would spin that off too.
Yeah.
On that basis, if they get it right and they do unbundle a couple of businesses and list them separately, do you think there would be a kicker higher in the
share? There could be a value unlock, but the underlying business is exactly as David subscribed. They're number three now in the telephone, in the cell phone business. But I still don't understand why Cell C and M didn't merge, because even number three, you are still a minnow compared to the giants, and you need cash for this business. You need serious cash, especially with 5G on its way. You actually can't compete. You're just not big enough. And, you know, I mean, I know it's including lockdown that, but I don't think I've answered a landline in 6 years. there's no landline. I mean, at our office, there's no more phones on your desk at the office, because everyone just phones you on your cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or as we're doing now.
Or WhatsApp.
Or using the internet.
But people just don't phone, they just send you a message.
Yes, or maybe there's someone desperately trying to call you on your landline and you've just refused to answer it for a couple of years.
I don't even know my landline number anymore. I keep
haven't even got a landline.
Okay, fair enough. Right, moving on. There's a question on Mediclinic and AVI. May I get the panel's view on them? David, I mean, we've spoken about the Remgro, the cheeky pitch to take out the minorities in Mediclinic. And Mediclinic being absolutely resolute in saying this is a totally lowball offer. We get the sense that Remgro is regrouping. Do you think they are? Do you think they're going to come back with a higher offer?
No, they better not. Because all it does is expose, you know, I don't want to be insulting because I've said so much already before, but I think it's wrong. You know, that's what I'm saying. If they are regrouping, they should have regrouped before they made a bid, and then they would have got it. Instead of coming back now, you say, well, you try to steal it from us. So I'm very angry about the whole way that companies with, you know, if they were a small minority, of course they're trying to grab it. But where they actually own the business and they the main partners, you know, give a massive premium. So, yeah, I hope they're not regrouping. But obviously they see value there, which is a good sign. So if I was, you know, it's worth playing that game. And just you know, taking shares and waiting for that kind of bid if they are regrouping.
I mean, Wayne,
did we really give it to them this time?
Hey, we did. Yeah, no.
No. Yeah.
We've not been very nice to Remgro. Wayne, you know, you think, okay, 85 rand, 90 rand, sort of okay price, until you remember that Mediclinic was at 200 rand, you know, in the heady days, and you think, oh, the, okay, no wonder Remgro is trying to buy them the cheap.
Well, those were the days before regulation, yeah. Before regulation interference. But I think I don't feel as passionately about this as David does. I think Rembrandt's going to come back with another offer. I think this is just normal negotiating tactics. You know, you don't show your full hand up front. And I think Rembrandt wants to take it out and delist it.
On that basis, would you actually buy a Mediclinic share now, that you, in the expectation that you're going to get
the share
a
has
offer?
Done. The share has done quite well. I mean, it's one of the few shares up today and up quite nicely. I don't know whether I'd buy at this level.
Okay. And then AVI, Wayne, sticking with you, you know, very well-run company. They were circled by some suitors last year and also...
Yes.
The suitors were told to pack their bags.
Definitely longer.
Yeah, but just the fact that they're squeezed in terms of commodities, is it going to be just really tough for them for the foreseeable future, like Tiger Brands?
But that's a cycle. That's a cycle. And if you get share price weakness, you buy this. I mean, this is truly, you know, put in your bottom drawer and hold for a very, very long time. It's an extremely good company. Personally, I think they should unbundle the businesses. You know, I think there'll be huge value unlock there. But right now, same as any other food producer, suffering from input cost inflation. Mm.
David, would you buy it and put it away? Or would you? Do you think that's money that's sort of trapped?
No, look, their brands are really good. I think out of most of the food companies, I think they stand ahead of everybody. And you class them as a food company because they make biscuits and tea and you know, other food stuff. So I like them very much, and I've always liked management. I'm not quite sure why they got Geiger's and funny shoe companies and so on like that, and you know, and perfume businesses. But I preferred them when they were a pure kind of you know, focused on fast moving goods or the manufacture of brands, which were always well accepted in, you know, have a high standing in the South African economy. And that allows them to pass on costs. You know, the kind of brands that they have are the kind that people will be loyal to and they will be allowed to pass on costs. You will pay that little bit extra for them.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And there's a question from a viewer who says, I'm considering buying either the local Satrix S&P 500 ETF, the Signia iTrix S&P 500 ETF, or the Satrix MSCI World ETF. Do David and Wayne have a preference? I mean,
look, if it's I don't think it's any difference. You're just choosing the world or the USA. I if that was the only choice I could make, I'd buy the USA.
Okay.
I mean, if I had another choice of cash, I'll stick with cash at the moment. But I'd rather buy the USA one than the world one.
David, would you be in the same?
No, camp? I like the US. Yeah, I think so.
But then
the world's okay. I mean, but you've got a lot of stuff that there that you don't really want. You know, if you want to build it, then buy Europe and buy buy the US. You don't want the UK. I know it looks cheap and that. And I suppose there are other a lot of areas that you don't want either. So just stay with the US for the meantime. They're going to be first out, you know, first out of when things start to turn. So I think they're the market that will lead the way out of where we are at the moment.
Okay. And would you have a preference between the Satrix S&P 500 or the Signia iTrix S&P 500? Is there actually a difference?
There's probably
There might be a cost difference. I don't know.
Well,
I mean, it's the same.
I don't know who sits there and balances these things. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know what the cost. I don't look for the pennies in the costs. You know, some of them might charge a little bit more, and that's too much hard work. You know, to do those kind of things. Yeah.
And then one day you open up your statements and you think, where are my returns? And it's because you were getting charged 3% per annum.
Yeah.
Then there's a question on Coronation. Is it a buy at the current price? And the viewer says, I've got 500,000 Rand to invest. Which three stocks would be good to invest in for the long term? So if you had to pick three stocks with that money.
Sure.
And firstly, firstly, Coronation. Wayne, do you think it's going to bumble along as markets are under pressure?
You know, asset managers are incredibly volatile. You know, they have good years and they have bad years, and the performance fees kick in or the performance fees don't kick in. But it's a fixed cost business. I like Coronation. You know, they've proven themselves over decades of being good asset managers. So I would actually buy at this price.
Okay.
You know, if I'm buying shares, I would buy at this price.
And if you had 500,000 Rand and you wanted three stocks to invest in over the long term, firstly, would you split that amount of money between three shares? Is that too concentrated?
Look, depends on your total portfolio.
Yeah. I mean, are there any three standout shares for you at the moment?
Well, if it's in only South African market, I would buy AVI. I'd definitely buy a bank, probably my own bank, First National Bank. They've done well, First Rand. And then I would go and buy a Platinum share. And why not? I mean, you can buy Impala, you can buy Sibanye. Those would be my picks if it was just domestic shares.
David?
I've got no. That's why I keep looking at the Karoos and I look at the transaction capitals. I'm trying to find some of those small businesses that hopefully are going to grow into big businesses. But I must be honest, I'm a little mystified at the moment, a little lacking, you know. I probably, if I was stuck with money here, I'd find one of those tractors. I don't know whether it's going to be the iTrix one or the Satrix one, but I'd probably put it in the S&P 500. But, you know, also, to be fair, I'm not put off by maybe Prosus or Naspers at these kind of levels either. You know, you're starting to get bottom area as well. And there's some good big caps. Bitcoins and that, so you could put a reasonable portfolio together, but to narrow it down to three is difficult for me. You know, I'd have to buy a basket. I feel much more comfortable with a little bit of a basket rather than just trying to select three companies.
Okay, fair enough. And also, but we don't know the viewer's circumstance and the context of their overall portfolio. Getting to your stock picks this evening, David, do you have any particular picks? I mean, having sketched out your mystification over the current trajectory of markets.
I'm beginning to look at a turnaround. I know that everybody's getting very depressed and that. But, you know, even now as I look, the NASDAQ is up again after yesterday. So that, to me, is a very good sign. And I think people are beginning to nibble. It might be a rally in a bear market. But I looked at Meta, and it's down 50%. And I know we hate the man and we hate the company. But I think sometimes you get these levels at which I think the, you know, shares start to look very attractive. So I would take a nibble or a punt in Meta at the current levels. We'll wait for the June numbers to come through. and see whether I'm right or not. You know, it's only a week away.
Okay. Wayne, you said, I mean, though you picked some shares for us for the viewer's portfolio, prospective portfolio, would you still be in cash at the moment?
Yes, boring, in cash, but the next move is to buy. Mm. And it's to probably buy the FANGs and the NASDAQ and the S&P 500. You know, I hope I haven't missed it. I hope there is still more downside and we can actually buy it. But the next move is to buy, but I'm sitting in cash at the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, we should leave it there. David, Wayne, thank you very much for joining us this evening. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. Wayne McCurry is from FNB Wealth and Investments. And we'll be back tomorrow night with Stockwatch. Have a good evening. Thank you.